Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good. And you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard, and it is absolutely freezing in the studio today. And why is that? Because on this particular spooky Hallow's Eve, it is bananas outside in Colorado. That's right. We got like a foot of snow in Denver. Now, the mountains always get smashed. That's really not a secret. But the biggest secret about Colorado is that we almost never get snow. And it doesn't really get that cold. It's usually sunny and beautiful most of the year. Except for this year, apparently. This is terrible. I don't know. I guess it's interesting. I could change my perspective on that and say it's interesting. But man, it's no fun right now. I'll tell you that. Today on the show, we have got Kat and Matt. This is a story that has to be heard to be believed. It's really something special. And man, I can't believe that they took the time to talk to me about this, and I can't wait for you to hear it. So I'm not going to say a whole lot of stuff up top. I did want to get into one thing as we're talking about deciding how you're going to move forward and change your perspective. There's some kind of East Coast toughness in Matt that I absolutely identify with. You know, there's a piece of me that has always felt a little softer and a little weaker than other people. But then I realize it's because I'm comparing myself to all the knuckleheads I know back home in Michigan. And, you know, I talk to some people out here more westerly, and it seems that I've got a reserve of, you know, you just get up and do it. You just, yeah, it sucks. You just get up and do it. And I thought by acknowledging that things were terrible, that was weak somehow. How weird is that? I don't know. But that's where I come from. I've got this whole thing about everything is terrible. Now what am I going to do? What do I have to do is more like it? Because there are days I slack off. I don't get things done. I don't accomplish everything that I set out to do. And, you know, you just write it off and say, all right, next time. Today, I had to get out of the house and shovel the walk. And I didn't want to do it, but it had to be done. There's something about taking deliberate action on behalf of yourself, especially when you don't want to, that can be a little empowering. So if you're looking for a small victory to give you that dopamine spike, to give you that serotonin smash, just go out and do something simple. Can't hurt. And at least you got something done. That's my thought process. That's where I'm at for today. Now, like I said, I'm going to keep this short and sweet up top. I've got links in the feed for where you can find Kat and Matt's website, and I highly recommend you check it out and keep up to date, because some very good news about her latest story, which we get into here, Unstoppable by Design, can be found at the website, and you're going to want to stay on top of this before it explodes. So here's Kat and Matt.
Thank you.
Hi, good morning.
Right. Good morning.
So, right out of the gate, let me ask you this. Where are you guys currently at?
We're both... Go ahead, Kat.
Yeah, we're both in Kentucky and both in the nice city of Berea today.
Nice. Yeah, yeah, I haven't been to Kentucky in quite a while. I used to go to Ohio a lot, and you know, we'd slip over to Kentucky once in a while.
Yeah, you stayed on the dark side, I see. no offense to Ohio.
Right? Yeah, yeah. No, Ohio's a weird place. It's definitely a weird place. But
more so than Kentucky.
Well, you know, in some ways, it's kind of funny. Every bit of geography has its own personality, and so there's you know, these little pockets of strangeness everywhere that you go, if you're looking for it. And I kind of love that because places that you would never expect to find. You know, these little pockets of, you know, the dark, weird, artistic stuff. It's always sprouting out of the sidewalks like grass in the cracks. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. Weirdness finds us, actually. So, yeah, I'm very familiar with that.
So, well, and I bet you are. Let's start there because I think that you guys' story is actually definitely one of people finding each other at the right time.
Yes, I think so. And it is weird.
Right.
So
let's start there. Because I'm really fascinated by that. Kat, tell me a little bit about you and where you grew up.
I grew up in Jellicoe, Tennessee, so a neighboring state, and also home of opera singer Grace Moore. Might as well throw that in there. But, you know, I'm a retired school teacher. I taught high school English and drama and now have retired from that career. And while I was teaching drama, they wanted to start a program because they didn't have one, and they asked me if I'd be interested. So I said sure, because I really don't like to read, and I really, so anything to get out of teaching another thing of English was great. So, you know, that's what I went into this new program thinking. And, you know, they don't really tell you the part about there's no funding, so you have no scripts, you have no props, costume, you know, none of that. They just, like, sell you on it and get you excited, and then, you know, you walk in and you've got the kids all excited and you have nothing to work with. So, you know, I went home that weekend because the kids were excited. They wanted to act, and there were like 15 kids in that first class. And I thought, well, you know, I can write a play. So I wrote a play, and I made sure like all the students would have a part. So I kind of customized the story for that first group of kids. And that is how my playwriting career began, although I wouldn't know it till years later when I would submit a play, actually, to your neck of the woods, I guess, to Pioneer Publishing, which is in Inglewood, Colorado.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah. So they published the play. And it's been doing great, performed all over the U.S. and Canada and, you know, even outside of North America. So, and that's about suicide. So very important topic. And I'm, you know, of the plays I've written, it was a significant one to begin my career as a playwright and let me see the power that, you know, writing plays, the impact that the arts could have in that way. So that's sort of, I guess, what you need to know about me. That's how I began playwriting and I was a teacher.
Hmm. That was, I mean, that's so that you write this play about suicide, and this is the play that you wrote for the school?
Yes. So I wrote it for the first group of students that I had in drama. And, you know, so I based, like, some of the story line is based on students that, you know, situations I saw.
Yeah. Write what you know.
Right. And so it was really, you know, I think that's really what makes it chosen to perform by so many different schools, is that kids can really relate, because, you know, in a sense, it is really based on the real feelings that teenagers go through.
Yes.
And family dynamics. So I think that is a lot of what has made it, you know, year after year, people choosing out of all the plays that they could choose, that they make the choice to choose May I Have Your Attention, Please. And of course, unfortunately, with the suicide rate growing, I'm sure that enters into it as well. But, you know, at the same time, there are those schools that are still afraid to talk about suicide for fear that
right.
it's going to cause kids to commit suicide, which, of course, isn't the case.
Right. It's the exact opposite of that. You need kids to talk about it.
Yes. And, you know, there are those schools that still are resistant to that. So, you know, that's one of the challenges, I suppose. But by and large, it's been really well received. And so for that, I'm really thankful that was my first published play. And I would go on and publish more. But that's, you know, that's special because it was the first one. And that's kind of where that began.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, too. I mean, that's right around that sweet spot, too, when people start discovering theater and things like that. I had discovered theater when I was a teenager as well. I joined a play because a girl I liked was auditioning, and then I got a part and she didn't.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But then I met a guy while I was making that play, and he was a terrible actor. But he was really passionate. And he said, yeah, the drama club keeps, they keep muscling me out. So I'm going to write my own plays. Do you want to come with me? And I said, yeah, because he was a really weird guy. And I knew he was going to make something crazy. So for no reason, I mean, it was something nobody was doing in the town we were living in Saginaw, Michigan. He just decided I'm going to be a playwright because I need somewhere to put all of this. And it was unique and it was strange. And he wrote these weird, bizarre plays, that were crazy. And that was what we chose to do with our summers, was fundraise and memorize and put on plays for about 5 years, before we went off to California to do, you know, Hollywood stuff.
That's really cool. So I think the message here is that the crazy, weird people are playwrights.
Yeah. Well, that's part of it. But, you know, I mean, the other part was the fact that when you've got all of this bottled up creativity, and especially when you're a teenager, you can definitely find some value in yourself by learning to express yourself through art.
Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about you, Matt. What was your upbringing?
So I grew up in New York, upstate New York, about 90 miles north of Manhattan. I was not interested in drama. I was not interested in school at all, actually. And ended up quitting it, I think I was 15. And, you know, I spent a few years drifting, sort of, doing things like painting houses and working in a garage and, you know, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Later on in my, I'm going to skip forward a bit, and in my, I believe it was my mid-20s, a little later, I got married, and the woman that I married had some addiction issues, and you know, I spent 10 years dealing with that. And we had a son together because, you know, that would be a smart thing to do.
Yeah, and that's what you do.
Right. <yeah. laughs> So I became a single parent at, I think I was, I want to say 30 something. It's all blurred to me now, but, so then I had met another woman and moved to Pennsylvania and, lived there, worked at a biotech company, as a maintenance person. And then I got into design and things like that. And I designed a bunch of processes for them that, you know, I'd never gone to school for any of that or engineering or anything. So I basically taught myself what I needed to know.
Mm-hmm.
And about 8 years later, I ended up getting laid off from that job. And the same week I was laid off, I found out I had a brain tumor. I spent the next 8 or 9 months dealing with that, getting the tumor removed and, dealing with the loss of income and stuff. So then I went back to work eventually and worked at a couple different places doing design type things. And then as a joke, one afternoon, I was sitting on my deck and, I got an email about a position for a designer at Cornell University. And I applied as a joke and ended up getting the job.
Yeah, you know, Cornell, yeah. that little university.
Yeah, so it was kind of ironic. I mean, I didn't go to school. I hated school. I hated anything to do with it. And here I end up at a Ivy League university working in the particle physics lab designing particle accelerators. A magazine contacted me about doing an article because they found that my story was interesting. And so the article appeared in the magazine, and a company, it's probably one of the biggest engineering companies in the U.S., contacted me about working on a, there's a uranium processing facility that they're doing in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, replacing some of the process stuff they have there for creating nuclear material. So I went and I did that for a couple of years, and then now I'm in Kentucky working on a process to destroy the last of the remaining chemical weapons that the U.S. has in inventory.
Huh.
And that's where I met Kat.
So. That's, you know, and
I thought he was in New York when I.
The thing I love about the way that you just told that story was that you completely glossed over. Yeah, and then I got laid off, and there was a brain tumor thing, and then and then I got another job, and wouldn't you know it?
Well, you know, the tumor was benign. It had been there since birth, and you know, it turned out to be just more of a pain in the ass than anything else, really.
Yeah,
I mean, it was scary, and you know, going through all that was certainly. An event at the time, but now I can look back on it and it's just kind of like, yeah, that's just how it was, you know?
But I mean, that level of connection to your reality where, you know, you just have that acceptance. I mean, was that something that you've always had? Where does that come from?
I think I spent a lot of time just reacting to things and, you know, that was just one more thing. I was like, okay, this, you know, like the thing with my first wife, you know, it was like, okay, this happened and this is what I need to do. And, you know, so I'm moving forward and that sort of thing. So, you know, sometimes the lessons that we have to learn take a while to sink in and, we finally get them, but, you know, you just have to keep moving forward. And if you don't, you know, life's just going to roll over you. And if you give up, then you're not living. So.
Yeah. But I mean, that's something that not everybody has, you know, that level of, you know, almost stoicism. But the thing is, there's a very big difference between, I'm sure the way that life is in, say, upstate New York versus, you know, the surrounding city. People tend to think of New York as this one thing, but upstate New York is quite different.
That's true. Yeah. I just did what I had to do, and, I didn't see that there was much choice in the situation. I mean, I had my son and I had my then current wife, my second wife, Diane, and her mother and Diane's daughter. They were all dependent on me for, you know, to kind of lead the way. And that's what I had to do. So then
you two, how do you two meet?
Cat.
Okay, so
because you could not be more polar opposites at this point,
and we still remain that way, I think. So, but I'm gonna make like a really big effort to make this a concise summary of how we met, because I could go on and on, and often do. But basically, I'll just say that 2017, September 22nd, my father passed away, and it was very unexpected. He went in with abdominal pain. Walked in, everything was great. We went back the next morning to see him. They were standing at the door and told us he had passed away just before we arrived. And of course, that was the worst news I ever could have imagined in my whole life, because I love my father, the most influential person in my life ever was my dad. We were just always close. And, so I was just hysterical, because I thought, you know, he's going to be fine. Never, never thought he was going to die. So, and 30 minutes goes by and they just leave us in the hallway, basically. And my mom's trying to get the cell phone from me so she can call my brother in Virginia and tell him what's happened. And I'm just like, I can't even give her the cell phone because I'm so distraught at hearing this. And then I see my dad being wheeled down the hallway. He's alive. He's going to have a test done. He's not dead. But, you know, for that moment, like, I'm thinking, am I hallucinating? You know, have I completely lost my mind? Am I dead? Am I seeing a ghost? I just really could not process, he's dead for 30 minutes and now I'm seeing him very much alive. But, you know, the hospital had mixed the patients up, and that was a very traumatic experience, to say the least.
Yeah.
But then, you know, what, 12 hours later, the phone would ring early on that next morning. And, you know, to make the long story short, my father would actually be dead. And that really was more than I could process. I hadn't recovered from the first death.
Yeah. You had to process this twice.
Yes. And, you know, I could never have imagined it once, much less the way that it happened.
Yeah, so, that's terrible.
For me, it was, I don't know what happened to me exactly, but from that point on, I was just sort of like a zombie in life. I didn't write, I didn't socialize, I didn't go to the gravesite. You know, I just did not think, I really thought I would just die. Like, you know, my dad is dead. This has happened to me. I will never, ever like live. And probably I will just have a heart attack and die or something because of the stress of it all. I kept each day, I'd wake up, I'd be alive. I'd watch The Office. I remember just like, you know, it didn't matter which episode, what order, I just would play The Office over and over and over, whatever episode it happened to be. And, you know, days turned into months and so forth. And then on Halloween of 2018, which is last year, I was scrolling on Quora, and I saw a post from a young person or someone in their 20s who was asking if their life was over because their friends were making more money than they were. And, you know, they had all these reasons like that. And so I'm thinking, you know, I've lost my father 2 times, you know, in less than 12 hours. My life is over. Your life's not over. And, you know, it kind of made me a bit angry, which is unusual for me because generally I like people a lot, and especially young people. But so this is where Matt comes into the story. He had commented on this post and told much of the same thing that you know he just told you, and it was an encouraging post to him. You know, like, I dropped out of high school, but I ended up with, you know, doing this at Cornell University, and so that, for whatever reason, caught my attention. I think, you know, maybe because of being a teacher and seeing so many of students that I had that dropped out not find success. And especially not at that level. So I wanted to know, like, you know, how does that happen? Even though I wasn't teaching at the time, I still, you know, I still wondered and was curious as to what was the secret. So, you know, being just like kind of one of the off the wall things that I still do, but at that time did as well. You know, I just thought, well, this would make a great play, and I'm just going to contact Matt. And this post was a couple of years old, so it wasn't like he had just made the post and the comment. So I didn't even know if he would get the message. And I didn't think it through. I just like thought, okay, this would make a great play. I'm just going to write to him and see what he says. So I wrote to him, you know, thinking he's in New York, like that he's still at Cornell, because I had no way, you know, to know otherwise right. at that point. So I guess that's where Matt can pick up the story, because I contacted him and he can tell you from there what happened.
Yeah, so she contacted me and, you know, said that she wanted to write this play about me. And at first I was like, is this woman, like, crazy? So,
I mean, she's a playwright, so maybe.
Yeah, so I actually had to, you know, see if she was in fact legit, and she was. So I was kind of relieved about that, not just some random person contacting me saying, hey, I'd like to write a play about you. So, so she, you know, we talked about how that would happen, and basically she sent me a list of questions, you know, asking me different things related to the article and other things that we had talked about. So I answered them as honestly as I could, and sent them back, and she wrote the first draft of the play, and it was pretty cool. I had to change a few things. She had me doing things in the play that I would never do, like, you know, one scene she had me crying, which so I was like, nope, that's out.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
Yeah. So you know, we went back and forth a few times about the you know, things that I wanted, and we changed a few things based, you know, just for realism and you know, continuity kind of thing. And we ended up with the final draft of the play.
So. Well, and that's got to be difficult. I mean, especially for a person who's not, let's say, you know, artistically motivated, that level of knowing that you're connected to this story in such a way, it kind of requires a level of emotional vulnerability that you're probably not comfortable with.
I do struggle with, you know, even now, the, you know, like, where's the line? Like, what, at what point do I want to stop telling this particular story?
Yeah.
And it's been difficult because, you know, there were like, there's a story in there about my first wife and an argument that we had. And, you know, I knew my son was going to read the story. You know, so I kept thinking, like, you know, I don't want to say too much, but, you know, I want to get the point across of what the story is about. So it was difficult in that regard. There's been a few other things that have been, like, you know, that have been difficult to talk about. We're actually writing a book together now, yeah. Which is sort of the same type of thing as the play. You know, it's stories from different events in my life. And then, you know, after the story, it's like the lessons that I learned from each thing. So that's been a little bit difficult, but I do find that I enjoy writing. I haven't really done a lot of it, but I do find that I enjoy it. And, you know, it's fun telling some of these stories and, like, getting them out of my head and onto paper. So.
Has the play opened you up a little about as far as being able to tell your story?
I think it has in some ways. You know, at first I was a little reluctant because I always thought, like, my life is just my life and, you know, whatever happened, happened. And
sure.
It didn't really mean much and that sort of thing. And, you know, I think through talking with Kat and, you know, working through some of the things that we've, you know, that we've talked about and, you know, wanted to include, I think I've realized that, you know, there's a story to tell, and if it helps someone in some way, then, you know, all the vulnerability and whatever doesn't mean anything, because I'm all, you know, I think my end goal is to help as many people as possible. And, you know, even the projects that I worked on at work are, you know, beneficial in lots of different ways. And, if, you know, me telling a story about being in a bad marriage or, you know, dealing with a brain tumor or whatever, if that helps someone in some way, great. So.
Yeah. But I mean, that is incredibly brave to go through those things and then, you know, have a certain type of, because the difference here is that, you know, as like a artistic type or a, you know, a playwright, you want to show everybody all of your guts, you know, it's all the time. You're constantly, you know, putting everything out there for everybody to see. But, you know, if that's not particularly where you come from, especially with, you know, the type of background that you've had where, you know, people wake up in the morning and they handle their shit because that's what you've got to do. Because there's things to be done and there's no time for all of this other nonsense. You know, I got a brain tumor. They took it out. Now I got to get a job. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
They could not be more diametrically opposed, but to be able to take that and sort of meld these two things together, these two separate, you know, it's like the chocolate and peanut butter of personalities. You've kind of made something pretty wonderful here.
I think the motivation was like, because so many people are stuck in the, you know, like, you know, their life and they're living the life that they have instead of the one that they'd like. You know, if my example can like help them achieve that, then, you know, I'm all for that. So, I mean, that's kind of why I put all that out there, and, you know, Kat and I wrote the play, and you know, it's to sort of help people understand that, you know, their life as it is now doesn't have to be as it is now. It can be different, but it takes work and it takes dedication and getting off your ass and, you know, that sort of thing. So
yeah. So Kat, tell me a little bit about your perspective on all of this. So when all of this is going on and you're writing this play, How do you put yourself in the headspace of Matt?
Well, I found early on with the questions that, you know, he was very forthcoming with anything I asked, but he didn't elaborate on anything I didn't ask. So, you know, I learned quickly that if I wanted to know something, you know, I was going to have to ask the questions. And I think once I asked, because originally I thought, you know, this is just someone who drops out of high school and they get this job at Cornell. And I thought that was the story. And that would have been enough of a story for me to make the play. But, you know, then when I started asking the questions and I find out about the marriages and the brain tumor and, you know, all these other things, then I'm thinking, like, you know, how am I going to do this? Like, am I getting too, you know, does he have too much of a story?
yeah. How do you distill this down?
Yeah. So, you know, I've got this stranger who I still think is in New York, you know, and, you know, I'm in Kentucky, and how are you even going to make it work anyways? And, you know, now I've got all this, and I've got him excited about me, you know, writing it, and, you know, how I knew I couldn't tell him, you know, this is just too much, I can't do it. And I'm not in a great, you know, frame of mind anyways for what I've just been through. But then, you know, once I... So the play basically starts with the interview at Cornell, and all these things in his life are flashbacks as they ask certain questions in the interview process. And, you know, just sort of to add a little bit of tension, you know, one of the interviewers will be of the mindset that if you didn't graduate from high school, you know, no matter what experience and what knowledge you've gained, like, if you don't do it this way, the way it's traditional, you know, there's no place for you at Cornell or for any place in the academic world. So it sort of looks at that, because there are many people who don't necessarily fit into that, you know, box that we think everybody should follow. But they have, like, immense talents, and, you know, they've worked hard and they have the knowledge. So really the play, once I decided, you know, this is going to be the focus, we'll do these as flashbacks, and then you'll find out the outcome of whether he gets the job or not, and that will be how the play ends. So, once I got that in my mind, you know, it was pretty easy. But I guess what I didn't expect is that, you know, that there would be a connection with Matt and I, because we are quite different. And, you know, we haven't missed a day of talking. Halloween will be 1 year. And so every single day since that first day, you know, we've either texted or met or spoke by phone. And we are very different, but we're also, like, there's something about combining us that works. And we've just been able to. So I think understanding him and writing the play, it was an easier task as far as the mindset of him than the structure of the play was the hard part for me at first.
But where do you, let me ask you this, because this is, I find all of this just, I mean, this is a really great story all the way around. I mean, your individual stories and then the combined thing and then the play on top of it all, to be able to have a box to put all of these things in as a representation of all of that. So when you're going through all of this, you know, you lost your father.
Yes.
It's twice. it's an incredible blow. And you're kind of trying to put yourself back together. And I imagine that some of that process of, allowing yourself to process the grief and get through it for you was to start writing again.
It was. And especially, I think this is probably where the important aspect is, you know, I'm writing this play that's supposed to motivate people, you know, to look at what your circumstances have been and what is needed to get you moving forward again. And so, you know, I'm writing this play with a message for other people, but yet I'm the one that needs the message. So really, you know, the message is for me. And everyone else will just get that message, you know, as a result of the product that we finish. But to me, I think in many ways, meeting Matt through these circumstances really saved my life, at least as far as like actually living one again.
Yeah. Because you could have just holed up and decided to, you know, let the pain and the unfortunate circumstances just overrun you and take over.
Yes, because I was really angry at first, you know, even with God. I was thinking, like, if there is God, you know, if my dad was going to die, like, so soon after this mix-up, why did you just not let the mix-up be the time that he died? You know, why would you make me go through this twice? So, you know, like faith, everything really, you know, there was my family unit gone. Like my dad was my person. So he was gone. My faith was gone. I couldn't ride anymore. Everything was gone. And then the play started just, you know, Matt's a total stranger, but yet he didn't feel like a stranger. Like almost immediately when he started telling me, you know, these struggles and the things that he had gone through, I'm thinking, you know, I can relate to struggle. The part I can't relate to yet is, you know, how to move past that. And so I think Matt, you know, telling his story and just talking with him, you know, it helped me to do that, and or at least to move in that direction. You know, I suspect I'll always struggle to some degree with what happened to my dad and missing him and the typical things, but at least, you know, it's become more of a what most people feel, you know, 2 years after a death. And I'm not like paralyzed by it like I was for that first year. So, you know, of course to me, Matt is like the greatest thing in chapter two of life. because, you know, I think everything ended with my dad's death. So that's my chapter. So Matt is sort of the second chapter, because that's where I begin to live again, I feel like.
So what else do you have, let's say, in your, you know, in your emotional toolbox, let's call it, as far as getting yourself through when things are hard? Because you've got writing, but what else do you have? Where else did you pick things up as far as being able to take care of yourself?
Well, you know, music, like all the arts. I've always been an arts person. I'm also an advocate. So I'm that kind of person too. And like when things go wrong, you know, I'm like going to be the person that's like fighting for you or trying to. So like helping people like that. And oftentimes that is through my plays or things like that. But, you know, writing in the arts, that's my biggest thing. And the rest of it is just focusing, or has been at least, because, you know, I mean, even though it's almost a year into this process of trying to rebuild, you know, I mean, I've gone to counseling almost weekly since my father passed away. So, you know, addressing like that part of it through counseling, making better food choices, exercising, you know, just working on myself really, and trying to do things that I have some control over, because, you know, in my father's situation, I had no control over that. And so I think it's been about trying to do things that I can control to some degree, and that's brought comfort to me. And of course, you know, having Matt to talk with, and to write with and work with, that'll, I would think, always will be a central part of my recovery, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. It's good to have that, support system, as far as, you know, and especially from multiple places, knowing that you've got a handful of things that are going to work when things aren't working for you, things to come in and help. So, I mean, as far as that's concerned for you, Matt, because, I mean, your situation is so much different and your personality is so much different. When things aren't going well, let's say, you know, when life goes sideways, what do you turn to try to keep your ship righted?
So I would guess that, you know, now it's writing is sort of therapeutic for me. Mm-hmm. You know, being able to put my thoughts down on paper and, you know, getting feedback from Kat about things and, you know, working on the projects that we're working on. It helps a lot. She's also very supportive of everything that I do, even if it's if my ideas are crazy or whatever. But, you know, she's willing to at least explore those things and tell me if I'm being stupid or whatever.
In a kind way.
Sure. She's like, oh, well, you know, maybe what we should do is.
Yeah, but not that's me, good, like, to have people that can, you know, very, very nicely suggest maybe you ought to try something else.
Yeah. I mean, I have a couple friends who are, you know, who I'm close to and, you know I can go to for advice, and they're going to tell me what I need to, not necessarily what I need to hear, but like, they're going to tell me the truth no matter what. And, that's very important. Everybody needs a couple people like that in their life. You know, too many people try and blow sunshine up your butt and say everything's going to be all roses and unicorn farts and,
yeah.
You know, and they're not being authentic with you, I guess. And, you know, to have those people in your life who will do that for you is a great thing. And, I'm lucky enough to have at least three.
How many more do you need? I mean, that's.
Yeah, enough. Really. you know, but, I just have to keep going. I mean, you know, I can't let the, like, little things slow me down. And, you know, after the brain tumor, I kind of decided that, you know, it was time to live my life instead of being just a sort of a, you know, drifting around in it. And I've made lots of choices and, you know, things that would help me along the way. I just realized that I had, you know, a limited amount of time and I wanted to do so many things. So the only way I could do that is to be proactive instead of reactive.
Yeah.
And, so that's what I've been doing for the past, what is it, almost 11 and a half years since the tumor.
It is pretty interesting the way that a lot of people, and I would dare say that it's probably most people, tend to be kind of passive participants in their own lives. You know, yes. Things just happen, and they happen to you, and you just kind of go from the next moment to the next moment looking for, you know, whatever baton is being handed to you as the next thing and going, okay, I guess I'll do that now.
Yeah, that's kind of how it was for a long time. Yeah. And, you know, at some point I just realized that I had to get off my ass and do something. You know, you only get, you know, all the cliches apply, you know.
Yeah.
You only get one chance at doing things. And, you know, if you miss the opportunity or you just, like, let it go or whatever, your life isn't going to be any more enhanced by it. You know, it's there's a lot of risk-taking involved and, you know, people get risk-avoidant, I would guess.
Oh, yeah.
I just didn't want to be that way anymore. You know, I've taken lots of risks since then, and, you know, sometimes things work out, sometimes they crash and burn.
But it's kind of great when things crash and burn in some ways, because, you know, when you experience that crash and burn, and you've already been through something that you thought was going to take you out at the knees, and it didn't, you're sort of equipped to be able to recognize that, okay, this didn't work out. This might have even knocked me down pretty hard, but I know from experience that I can get back up and do something else.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, like I was saying, people get risk avoidant and, you know, there's I forget who said it, but, there's a saying that, ships are safe in a harbor, but that's not what they're built for. And so that's, you know, I kind of keep that in the back of my mind. I just need to get out there and do stuff and, you know, not, like, worry so much about all the potential outcomes, you know.
Yeah. It's much better to have, you know, tried to write your name on the wall of the world than to worry about how you're going to get there.
That's true. I mean, you know, I'm not so, like, I'm not focused on, like, you know, I want my name in lights and, you know, I want to be famous and all that. I mean, I could care less about that crap.
But, sure.
I do want to make an impact on people's lives in some way. And if I can, great. If not, I'll just keep trying.
Yeah. You know? I mean, that's precisely what I'm talking about when I say, you know, getting out there and writing your name on the wall, just as a matter of having your story out there for better or for worse, for whoever needs it.
Yeah,
that's true. Kind of the whole point. I think that if we're going to be, you know, stuck on this ball together, the least we can do is try to help each other out in the ways that we know how. I mean, everybody's got different skills. Everybody has different ideas, and so sharing these things with each other is really the only way we're going to move forward.
Yeah, some people just won't do it for, you know, they feel like they'd die of embarrassment if people knew something about their, you know, about their story that was uncomfortable or whatever. Yeah. And you know, again, that's just like risk avoidance. You know, putting your story out there is not the most comfortable thing, but it is pretty rewarding. I'll give you a quick example of that. We had done it was a night of plays to honor Kat in her, you know, her playwriting and Unstoppable, which is Unstoppable by Design, which is the name of the play, was done by a group of students and teachers from high school here in Kentucky at that event. And after the event, this young man came up to Kat and said, you know, he was pretty upset. And he said that the play had motivated him to, you know, he was a 17-year-old kid graduating high school. He was supposed to go to college, but all of his scholarship money had kind of dried up. So he was planning on just getting a job somewhere and, you know, just doing that and not going to school. But after hearing my story, he was motivated to go and seek the, you know, what he needed in order to go to school and, you know, make a better life for himself. His situation, we learned later that evening, was not the greatest, and he had some, you know, craziness in his life that he had to overcome. And so we found out recently that he is actually in school at UK and doing well, and, you know, so that's, I'm happy for that, you know. I'm glad that he got something out of it and made the changes that he needed to, and, you know, he's moving forward, so.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I think one of the things that people can certainly take away just from the conversation that I've been having with you here for this past little while, one of the things that I notice in the way that you speak about things and talk about getting through things is to just not stop, to keep going. No matter what, just keep going. And that's great advice for just about anybody, especially if you're having a hard time with something. The very act of keeping yourself in motion, you know, both physically and mentally, you know, striving for things, the act of wanting to keep going, the act of pushing yourself through the other side when you don't want to keep going, can really be a lifesaver. And I think that, I think Kat can speak to that.
Yes, for sure. And you know, I think it is strange because, and there may be lots of people that were like me as well. Like, I was always very driven. You know, I certainly had like ups and downs like everybody has prior to my dad's death. So, you know, I was always resilient and I was always involved in life. And I always had that belief that, you know, if you put forth effort, whatever you work for, you can achieve that. And, you know, I was just kind of idealistic like that, but also very persistent. And then, you know, it took the death of my dad the two times. You know, that just seemed to be, that was the punch that I didn't think I'd get back up from. But like you mentioned earlier about like the worst thing that could happen now, like I view life as, you know, the worst thing that could ever happen has happened. And, you know, 2 years later now, I'm still here and I have a purpose. And, you know, so that gives me a different perspective. But certainly, you know, there's going to be different things. Like maybe it's just that your girlfriend or boyfriend breaks up with you when you're, you know, in high school, and maybe that to you is the punch you think you can't get back up from. But, you know, once you do, then you'll be stronger on the other side. And, you know, persistence to me has been the quality that I think has made the biggest difference in my chapter one life anyway. You know, whether it's getting a play published or whatever the case may be, you know, if people tell me no, then I'm just always looking for, okay, well, you said no, but, you know, let's look at this. So I don't take no for an answer easily. but, you know, there was just that death of my father. You know, that was the thing I just was not prepared for in any way to deal with.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot more to look forward to in the future from both of you. And I just cannot thank you enough for coming on to share this story with me and with everybody else. Thanks for talking to me today.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you. We appreciate your you know, letting us come on the show and you know, tell our stories and stuff. It's been good.
It absolutely has been good. You know what? If there's anything you take away from this, it's that whatever it is that your life has been, tell your story. Get out there. Write your name on the wall. What's the worst that could happen? You know, it's a primal instinct. It's a caveman behavior to want to get out there and draw on the walls of life. So, yeah, you should absolutely do it. And if you want to find out more about how Kat and Matt have done it, you can go to mayihaveyourattentionplease.com and keep up to date with everything that's going on, including finding out all the details on when you can see and when you can get more information on Unstoppable by Design. And until next time, don't kill yourselves out there.